Good afternoon. I'll call the meeting of the Conference Committee on House File 3422 to order. This meeting will be held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. So it's been a while since we last met, but there's been ongoing discussions on the issues before us. Thanks to everyone for offering their feedback and continue to work on issues to get us to a point of closure. We received spending guidance from House and Senate leadership on Tuesday, and Senator Westrum and I were able to make some progress on a number of provisions before this conference committee. For reference, House Articles 1 and 2 and Senate Articles 2 and 4 of House File 4366 were referred to this conference committee under Joint Rule 2.06, so they will be a part of today's discussion. Before we get started, does Senator Westrum have any comments about the plan today?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Senate is interested in going through the agreement. As we've talked earlier, we also are interested in the broadband agreement being part of our action that we would take today and try to move this package that's then resolved forward as we're getting near the end of session. And so when it's appropriate, we can talk more about that as well. But I understand we want to start walking through provisions, and that sounds like a good start. The Senate is in session. We've got other conference committees, as the House does. So we are going to have to also try to work on membership matters, because we're down a couple right now already. So I'll keep you posted on that as we go through. But that's all I have to say for now.
Okay, thank you, Senator. We'll be sticking to this agenda as presented as best we can. The broadband issue has still got some kinks to work out. We may have to recess and revisit this. So moving forward.
Mr. Chair.
Nancy?
Yes, sorry. I think I gave you some erroneous information before. It's Articles 1 and 3 of the Senate, not 2 and 4.
Okay.
So, apologies on that.
That's okay. All right. Is everyone clear on that? It's just a grammatical glitch. 1 and 3 rather than 2 and 4 of the Senate articles. All right. Since we have a little, since we've had this time to put this proposal together, we'll work with the drought section. Staff can take it away. Please identify yourself for the record and highlight the proposal, please.
Mr. Chair, if you'd like, I can go ahead. I know House Fiscal is tied up with another committee. So I'm Hannah Grunwald, the Senate Fiscal.
Thank you.
So I can start. I'll walk through the spreadsheet that should be provided in your packets. Just to make sure we're looking at the right spreadsheet together. This is House File 3420 Drought Relief Conference Committee is the title, and in the upper right hand corner, printed 519 at 7:40 p.m.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thanks, Nancy, for pulling that up. So, just to orient you to the spreadsheet a little bit, columns B and C show the original House position, column D and E show the original Senate position, and I'll be touching on columns D and E, which is the chair agreement that Chair Sundin was alluding to. So beginning with Minnesota Department of Agriculture, here there's a total of 13.1 million in fiscal year 22, 8.1 of which is for livestock and specialty crop producer grants. And that you can see that on line 2. Then on line 9, there's a 2.5 million transfer to the Rural Finance Authority. Then on line 10, there's a 1 million appropriation to the veterinary diagnostic laboratory equipment. Then on line 11, there's a transfer to the Ag Emergency Fund of 1.5 million. Then moving on to the Department of Natural Resources, on line 15, there's a $300,000 appropriation for resolving well interference. And then on line 18, there's appropriation of 5 million in the second year fiscal year 23 for replacing drought killed seedlings. And so total in DNR appropriations is 5.3 over the biennium. And that rounds out the total of this drought package to 18.4 million in fiscal year 22-23. And I'll pause there and see if anybody has any questions. Otherwise, I can move it to Mr. Sullivan and Ms. Painter for policy.
Okay, thank you, Hannah Greenwald. Is there any questions on that spreadsheet? Hearing none, we can move on. Mr. Sullivan, please.
Mr. Chair and members, this is Colby Sullivan in House Research. We're walking through the revisor's language document prepared for the disaster relief agreement. In the top right corner of the document, it's right on your screen now, it's BD-AG-disaster, dated 5/19/22 in the top left. The first section is a permanent change to the Rural Finance Authority's Disaster Recovery Loan Program. This was part of the language passed by the House, but there's a change in the Conference Committee agreement to the House language on 1.12. The House had proposed changing this portion of eligibility criteria to 20% of average of annual gross income in the prior year. The Conference Committee agreed to change that number to 25% instead. Then moving down to section two, this is the $8.1 million appropriation Ms. Greenwald referenced for disaster relief grants and other forms of financial assistance to eligible livestock farmers and specialty crop producers who were impacted by the 2021 drought. On line 1.20, the Department of Agriculture could use up to 6.5% of this amount for administrative costs. Subdivision two is the eligibility criteria agreed to in this proposal by the House and Senate conferees. Eligibility would be limited to those farmers and producers who are located in a county that was designated by the USDA or United States Department of Agriculture as a primary natural disaster area. After July 19th of last year and before January 1st of this year, and there's a new addition to note on 1.24 to 1.25, eligibility would also include farmers located in a county that's contiguous to a USDA designated primary natural disaster area. Then the second part of the eligibility criteria, this is sort of a fusing of the House and Senate proposals coming into conference. An eligible producer or farmer would need to submit to the Department of Agriculture an inventory of eligible expenses that they incurred and attest that they were indeed incurred as a result or in response to the drought. And then paragraph B, starting on 1.29, this just signals to the Department of Agriculture that eligible expenses for compensation under this program include certain expenses incurred by livestock farmers to transport feed or feed ingredients, so long as those same expenses haven't already been reimbursed by the federal government under a USDA program. Next, then moving on to subdivision three, this is sort of splits the difference between the House and Senate coming into conference. Under this language, an eligible farmer or producer could receive a grant equal to the total eligible cost that they incurred and attested to, up to a limit of $7,500 per farmer. Then the application process, the Department of Agriculture would accept applications for at least 10 business days. And it could also accept applications that were postmarked during that same period. And then the language provides what happens if applications exceed the $8.1 million during that initial period or not. So if the applications do exceed $8.1 million during that first application period, the department would award grants or other forms of financial assistance to eligible applicants on a pro rata basis. But if eligible applications are less than $8.1 million, then the Department of Agriculture would reopen the application process and accept additional eligible applicants until the money is exhausted. Finally, subdivision five, this is from the Senate. Proposal coming into conference, it's an annual report from the Department of Agriculture to the legislature on this grant program. Next, subsection three, this is the $2.5 million transfer Ms. Grunewald discussed in the spreadsheet to the Rural Finance Authority. The Rural Finance Authority with these dollars would give priority to loans to farmers dealing with the drought under the RFA's Disaster Recovery Loan Program. And there are annual reports required from the RFA under this language. Section four, $1 million for a grant from the Department of Agriculture to the University of Minnesota to purchase equipment for the veterinary diagnostic laboratory that could test for animal disease. And there are also annual reports required for this funding item as well. Section five is the $1.5 million transfer to the existing agricultural emergency account. The language specifies that this $1.5 million is in addition to the $1 million that the legislature passed and the governor signed in April that also provided money for this purpose. And paragraph B specifies that until December 31st, 2022, the Department of Agriculture may use money in the Ag Emergency Account to respond to highly pathogenic avian influenza as provided in the law that passed in April, which basically allowed the department to purchase testing supplies. And it also authorizes the department to transfer a portion of the money to the Board of Animal Health for its response to highly pathogenic avian influenza, including to perform surveillance. And then section six, because there are some appropriations, actually, I think all of these appropriations in this article are in the current fiscal year. Section six specifies that this law would take effect the day following final enactment and the money would become available immediately. Next is the natural resources article. This is a portion of the House language, the $300,000 Ms. Grunewald mentioned is to the Department of Natural Resources to resolve well interferences that occurred after April 30th last year and before December 31st. And then paragraph B is $5 million to the DNR to replace drought-killed seedlings on DNR lands and to administer grants to tribal, county, and private forest land owners so that they can replace drought-killed seedlings on their land. And this section would also be effective the day following final enactment. And with that, Mr. Chair, that's the end of the language document for the drought agreement.
Does that complete the walkthrough on the drought proposal?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Questions? Yes. Thank you. I see Representative Anderson has a question. And he's on mute.
You would think I would have learned by now, but anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair. Question to Mr. Sullivan, talking about the application process for those who want to apply for the drought aid. Language says the department will take applications for 10 days. Is that a hard cutoff? I know you were something else you mentioned about accepting additional applications. So my point is no checks can be sent out until we know if the total amount of money has been determined or if it's going to be on a pro rata basis. So how long is this going to stretch out to beyond the 10-day application period?
Mr. Sullivan, can you give us clarity on that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, the language just provides that once the application period opens, the department must keep it open for at least 10 business days. So it could be more than that. And then the department might have an idea of once they close that application window, how long it would take to determine the eligibility from those who applied, the total amount applied for, and to compare that against the total appropriation. I don't have a good feel for how long it would take the department to do that calculation, but someone on the call may.
Can the department weigh in on that? Please.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Peterson, please.
Tom Peterson, Commissioner of Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and I would defer to, it looks like Ashley Breath would be the best person.
Ashley Breath, please.
Or Paul Huguenin, yeah.
Or Paul Huguenin.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Paul Huguenin. I'm the Director of the Ag Marketing and Development Division. So our plan would be, I mean, obviously the rider says we must keep it open for at least 10 days. There's language about postmarked. So we're assuming that means we would want to allow 2 to 3 business days for things to come in that are postmarked. What we will do as applications arrive is go through those, the list of expenses and be able to kind of keep a running count of what that request is. So that hopefully once we get to where that first batch is arrived, we'll know, do we need to prorate? Do we, or will we have enough to just issue full payments across the board? To answer the specific question from Representative Anderson on how long will that take? Frankly, a lot of that will depend on how many farmers apply. Is it 1,000? Is it 10,000? Is it 500? Know that we will work as quickly as we can. We know that time is of the essence to producers. But until we see the number of applications, it's we can't give you a real firm answer.
Representative Anderson, any follow-up on that?
Yeah, a quick follow-up to Mr. Huguenin. You know, this has been going on now for a long time, this proposed drought aid package. And speaking for a lot of farmers, drought now is the furthest thing from our minds with being inundated by rain. So how are we going to get the word out to folks that, yep, we finally got this passed and you can apply? Everybody's really busy right now trying to get their spring planting done. So how are we going to get the word out to farmers that, yes, they can go ahead and apply, and it's going to be a 10-day period in which they have to do it?
Commissioner Peterson is anxious to answer that.
Thank you, Representative Anderson, and I agree. This is something that I was just thinking that where the idea came from for these rapid response grants was at Farm Fest, you know, and we met with people there and the Cattlemen and Farmers Union and Farm Bureau. That's how long it is. And so, you know, what I'm hopeful too is, yes, we're past the drought, but the lingering effects, we have seen dairy farms as recent as this last week, even in your own district, unfortunately having to sell their cows, but hopeful that they're able to come back. I see the line at the sale barn by me on Sunday nights of people still reducing their herds as we're still a few weeks away from cutting hay. And what I'm hopeful with this money is that we'll help pay a bill or two. That being said, we're going to be very aggressive on our communications and rely on our partners, whether it's the farm groups and the farm organizations, our ag media, but then we also need to go beyond our ag media as our and our traditional farm groups, because this also does include specialty crops. And so as we're trying to outreach whether it's Latino or Hmong farmers who may not read Ag Week or listen to the Linder Farm Network, there's a lot of work to do there. So we have a very strong outreach plan to make this happen. And so appreciate that we're moving forward on this. Obviously wish it would have come a lot sooner, but we'll do our best to be as aggressive as possible. I want this money out the door and to be as effective as possible. So thank you for that question, Representative Anderson.
Senator Westrum, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just maybe a clarification from council, but the 10 days is a minimum. There is ability, and Representative Anderson, to your question, some of the concerns from others, that they could open it longer, and I think Mr. Sullivan touched on that a little bit, but maybe we can talk on that a little bit more with the assumption that maybe the money doesn't all go out in the first 10 days or 2 weeks, ultimately, because 10 business days. But Representative Anderson, I share your concern, and one of the reasons we wanted to make sure there was flexibility in opening it back up. And I guess as I'm talking, maybe Commissioner Peterson, we could hear from you on that and the idea of reopening it, which, you know, our concept is you might, everybody that applies in the first 14 days or 2 weeks might get a check, and then if it's reopened, there might become a need to prorate. And so I could see that scenario happening. Commissioner Peterson, if you want to comment on that, and Mr. Sullivan, maybe being you walked through that, you could comment as well.
Commissioner Peterson, please.
I probably again defer to Mr. Huguenin, on how this might work. The one thing I would say is that, I think it could be interesting to see, to be honest with you in the committee, I'm more worried about the specialty crop piece and getting that out to that. I think the cattle groups are very aware and are following this and know that it's going to happen. I think that, how this works and getting it out, it's going to be a priority of mine and the agency on how we communicate that to the specialty crop growers. And so I think that we can work with that, but Paul, do you have any other comments on how that might work? Because Paul will be kind of administering this as we are Paul's division.
Mr. Huguenin, please.
Mr. Chair, members, so the way we would picture this working, so we need to keep it open for at least 10 days, allow for some postal service entries to come in that are postmarked within those first 10 business days. And if that amount that comes in exceeds the amount of money available, then we would prorate. But if not, we would go ahead and make full payments. Once that first window is open or is closed rather, then applications that come in after that, if there's money still available, would be made on a first come, first serve basis. So it's really only when you hit that first deadline where it's like, okay, we've stopped getting those postmarked entries after that 10-day window. We would probably want to go ahead and process those at that point. Unless there's clearly not a strong response and we're nowhere near the amount appropriated, in which case we can just continue to leave it open before we process it. But the plan is once we get that first big crunch, process those, make those payments, and then if there's money available, then those get paid first come, first serve. Hopefully that helps.
Any follow-up, Senator?
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Huguenin, the payments that go out, will they, you said it'd be the second round, for example, would be first come, first serve. Would you anticipate possibly prorating at that point if you get, let's just say, 500 the second opening and there's only so many dollars? Or are you thinking you would just, the first 100 would get paid and the last 400 wouldn't?
Mr. Huguenin?
Mr. Chair and Chair Westrom, once we've done that first batch, and then if we get additional applications after that and there's money available, we would do that first come, first serve, because otherwise it would require setting a whole kind of an arbitrary second deadline. And if there's a need to, hold that first one open longer because we're clearly not getting enough applications and farmers need more time, we would hold the first window open longer if needed. But once we close that first batch, then the intention is we would make that second group first come, first serve as long as money, until the money is completely spent.
Last question, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Senator.
Representative, Mr. Chair and Mr. Huguenin, you talk about postmark, but is there also likely or going to be a link, website online where people could just fill out a one or two page form and just click submit and have it in automatically? Is that an option? I know it might not be the preference of every farmer. There's probably a correlation to the younger being more interested in the online, but is that going to be an option to help make it easy for farmers if they so choose?
Mr. Huguenin?
Mr. Chair and Chair Westrom, yes, that's I'm so glad you asked that question and brought that up. We absolutely will have an online application portal. And in fact, we encourage people to use it because it will speed the process up for everybody. It will speed up, the farmer's time. They don't have to worry about, printing and filling out a form or anything like that. So we will definitely have an online portal. but we do know it's important. Not all farmers, want to use the online version. And so we'll have both options, and that's why we're allowing the postmarked and some time for people who do choose to mail it. But, to the extent that you can encourage your constituents to apply online, just because it'll be faster for them and hopefully speed up the whole process.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Anderson, did you have a question again?
Mr. Chair, I did have my hand up, but yeah, just one, again, kind of a technical question or clarification. We're talking about grants of up to $7,500. But if somebody submits expenses for $3,000, that would be the size of the grant they get, correct? They're not all going to get $7,500. Clarify that for me.
Mr. Huguenin, please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, yeah, you're exactly right. They would, the farmer would receive the amount that they applied for and that they attested to on their application form up to $7,500.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any further questions on this? Okay, we're to a point where Senator Westrom, would you like to move adoption of the revisor's document coded BD-AG-disaster? And then we can take questions, more discussion, if you make that motion.
Move the adoption. Mr. Chair, The Senate, as we discussed earlier, is going to move all three together as part of the deal. So I would hold off on adopting this at this point in time.
Okay, we'll see how that works in the ultimate plan here. Check on this. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would... maybe we just go through the next ag document to do a walkthrough first.
I'm going to take a little advice from the committee administrator here.
Mr. Chair, if you are not going to vote on this, then yes, the next order would be Ms. Grunewald would walk through the ag spreadsheet.
Okay, we'll just put that on hold at this point. Ms. Grunewald, do you want to walk us through the spreadsheet on the proposal for the supplemental ag appropriation? Ms. Grunewald, please identify yourself.
Continue. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Hannah Grunewald. I'm the fiscal analyst with the Senate, and I'll be walking through the spreadsheet titled House File 4366 Agriculture Provisions Only Chair's Agreement, dated 5/20/944 a.m. And this spreadsheet is fairly similar to the drought spreadsheet we saw before. There's columns showing the House position and the Senate position, although on this spreadsheet, it's only showing biennial totals. And then on columns G and H show the chair's agreement for fiscal year 22-23 and fiscal year 24-25. So beginning with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, the first change item here is on line 8 for Forever Green, $630,000 each year in the tails is set as the base for this item. There's no preparation for fiscal year 23. Then moving down to line 16, there's a $10,000 appropriation to the regional food system report, and I believe that was in both the House and Senate original positions. On line 18, so $1.25 million appropriation in fiscal year 23, which is ongoing in the same amount for bio-incentive payments under AGRI. On line 19, there's a fiscal year 23 appropriation of $650,000 for livestock processing facility grants. And this appropriation is also made ongoing at an amount of $250,000 each year in the tails. On line 25, there's a $22,000 appropriation beginning in fiscal year 23, ongoing each year thereafter for the agricultural mental health specialist. And on line 26,
for the Soil Health Financial Assistance Program, the one-time funding of $500,000 in fiscal year 23. On line 28, for emerging farmers, there's $827,000. And the details of this provision, we can go into a little bit further when we're talking about policy, but I'll just note the amount for now. On line 29, for information technology modernization, so appropriation of fiscal year 23 of $750,000, and then appropriation of $584,000 in fiscal year 24. And both of those are one-time amounts and not ongoing. Then on line 30, for the Ag Emergency Fund, there's a one-time transfer of $1.5 million in the first year. And you'll notice there's an asterisk here on the next page. I'll touch on when we get there, but on the next page, there's just showing the total of this appropriation in this language and the drought language that we just discussed. Just to note that for now, but I'll bring it up when we get to it in the spreadsheet again. On line 31 for the veterinary diagnostic lab, there's a appropriation in fiscal year 23 for $250,000. And then again for $250,000 in fiscal year 24, and then no appropriation in fiscal year 25 and ongoing. On line 34, for the beginner farmer tax credit infrastructure appropriation, there's funding of $141,000 in fiscal year 23 and $56,000 each year in the tails. Then for the Ag Innovation Campus, there's one-time funding of $750,000 in fiscal year 23. Line 36 shows the aquaculture plan, which doesn't include fiscal year 23 funding, but does include a base of 50,000 in fiscal year 24, one time only. On line 37, for farm down payment assistant grants, there's beginning funding in fiscal year 23 of 500,000, and then ongoing in the tails of 750,000 each year. Now I'll turn to the next page. Right at the top here, you'll see the last item underneath MDA for meat processing education grants for secondary schools. That's one-time funding of 350 in fiscal year 23. And then, so overall MDA has an increase of 7.5 million in fiscal year 22-23, and in the tails an overall total of 6.8 million increase. The last two items here are under AURI. First, on line 47 for lab equipment, there's a one-time appropriation of $300,000 set in the base. So there's no current biennium funding, but $300,000 is set to be funded in fiscal year 24. And under line 48 for the COLA adjustment, again, here there's no current biennium funding, but for the tails, there's a base of 200,000 set each year. So overall for the tails for AURI, that's 700,000 overall of an increase. So this agreement overall, you'll see on line 54, is a total increase of 7.5 million in the first biennium and 7.5 million in the tails. And I'll just note here on line 79 and 80, this shows both the Ag Emergency Fund total and the VDL total with the drought relief agreement that we previously discussed. So just to recap, for Ag Emergency total, there would, with the drought relief bill and this language, there'd be a total of 3 million for the Ag Emergency Fund in the first year. For VDL, there would be 1 million in fiscal year 22. And then 250,000 in fiscal year 23 and 250,000 in fiscal year 24, and then zero in 25. And Mr. Chair, I'll pause there to see if there's any questions. The remainder of the spreadsheet just shows non-general fund expenditures and transfers, which I could go into more detail if you'd like. And Mr. Chair, I believe you're muted.
I took lessons from Paul Anderson on this. Any questions on the spreadsheet from the committee? I don't have the picture up If anybody's raising their hand. There we go. Any questions from the committee on the spreadsheet? Okay, seeing none, hearing none. Mr. Sullivan and Ms. Painter, please continue with the proposal regarding the supplemental ag appropriation section that were referred to us in House File 4366. So go ahead with your walkthrough, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll be working from the revised document, Agricultural Appropriations. In the top right, the title is BD-AG-APP, and it's dated 5/20/22 at 10:32 a.m. And I'll pause just a quick second for Ms. Conley to pull it up. There it is. And there's not a whole lot to cover in this because this is the language that implements the appropriations that Ms. Grunewald just described via the spreadsheet. But there are just a couple of quick language items to show members on page 3. The bottom of that page, starting on 3.20, this is the language for Forever Green. And as Ms. Grunewald noted, there would not be an appropriation for Forever Green in this biennium, but this language would add funding to the Department of Agriculture's base for fiscal years 24 and 25, the next biennium, for grants to the University of Minnesota. And this rider also specifies this legislature's intent that for these grants in 24-25, eligible uses would include, but not be limited to, equipment and physical infrastructure, as well as the development of enterprises, supply chains, and markets for continuous living cover crops and cropping systems. So again, that's a not an exclusive list of eligible uses, but those are two uses identified by this legislature for that funding in the future. And that reflects positions of both the House and the Senate coming in conference committee. And then on page 5, bottom of that page is the local food report language that both the House and the Senate funded. This language specifies that the report would be an interim report on the statewide cooperative partnership for local and regional markets and would include recommendations for strengthening local and regional food systems. And then finally on page 19, Ms. Grunewald made mention to this rider because it is pretty significant and has changed a bit from the House and Senate language. See it there, it starts on line 19.4. And it provides for the $827,000 that's appropriated in 23, the department may award grants for three different purposes. One for organizations that provide technical and culturally appropriate services to emerging farmers and related businesses. Number two, to organizations that will help emerging farmers pay for up to 65% of their premium expenses for up to 2 years under the USDA's micro farm risk management program. The 65% limitation is new in this conference committee report as part of the agreement. And then clause 3, third eligible use of this money for emerging farmers is for grants to the Good Acre or the Local Emergency Assistance Farmer Fund or LEAF program to compensate emerging farmers for crops donated to hunger relief organizations in Minnesota. And I'm happy to answer any questions that members may have, Mr. Chair, but that's all that I have to walk through.
Maybe we can hold off on questions just for a second and allow you to go through the statutory changes if you want to proceed with that, please.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. That's a separate revised document that's posted online and should be available to members. It's the top right. The title on this one is BD-AG-STAT. There it is on your screen, dated yesterday at 11:38 p.m. And the first section then, as part of the statutory changes for this conference committee agreement, this is a change to eligible uses for the Ag Emergency Account, which receives additional funding also in this conference committee. The House carried the governor's recommendation and passed it to expand the department's uses of this account to include emergency preparedness. And that's in this section one, but it's changed and limited. You see on 1.11 and 1.12, The only eligible preparedness uses of money in this account are training and the procurement of equipment and supplies. Moving on to section two, both the House and the Senate passed the governor's recommendation to reestablish a cooperative grants program with the Department of Ag. The compromise is on page two, line nine of the conferees. So the chairs have proposed agreeing to the Senate's requirement that any grant under this program be matched dollar for dollar by the recipient. Next are a series of sections that passed the House and the Senate in identical form. So we can move through those pretty quickly. That's three, sections three, four, five, six, seven, and on seven. So then we're on to page six, top of that page are changes to the Livestock Investment Grant Program. The governor recommended and the House passed changes in this area. This is a compromise position as a result of the conference committee negotiations. You'll see on section one, or excuse me, subdivision one, establishment. The conference agreement would retain the existing $50,000 cap on grants, but it would eliminate the cumulative total of $50,000, but and require the department to give preference to any applicants who have not previously received a grant. Then moving on to section nine, this is also Livestock Investment Grant Program. This was House and Senate language, or excuse me, House language, and recommended by the governor that eliminates, again, language that refers to the $50,000 cap that applies at the partnership or entity level for certain corporations and entities. Then section 10, this is the Farm Down Payment Assistance Grant language that the House brought to conference. The language on this page six is the same as in the House language, but moving on to page seven, see there's a report requirement, subdivision three, that would require annual reports from the Department of Agriculture to the legislature with specified components. And those components go down through line 7.24. Next, on the bottom of page seven, section 11, this was a House provision that's modified in this report. The House proposed to extend the expiration of this account and change its name. You'll see that reflected here in section 11. But the House proposal to expand on the eligible uses of the account, that was not approved by the Senate, so that's not in this language. And then we move on to page eight. I'll turn it over to Ms. Painter to pick up language concerning the ACRA program.
Ms. Painter, please.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Laura Painter. I'm a legislative analyst for the Senate. Sections 12 to 14 make changes to the Agricultural Chemical Response and Reimbursement Program. Section 12 raises the account minimums and maximum amounts. So the new floor is $2 million and the ceiling is $6.5 million. Section 13 raises the balance amount where partial reimbursement is allowed from $2 million to $3 million. And that request came from the Department of Agriculture. Section 14 raises the maximum reimbursement payment from $350,000 to $550,000. That was a slight amendment from the Senate language. All of these sections are effective January 1, 2023. And I'll turn it back over to Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Sullivan, please.
Mr. Chair and members, then picking up with section 15, this is from the House language. It adds a new member to the Food Safety and Defense Task Force, someone who is knowledgeable in cybersecurity. Then section 16 is new language that would allow the Board of Animal Health to apply for, receive, and disperse federal money that's provided to the state for animal disease response. So for this limited purpose, the Board of Animal Health could bypass the Legislative Advisory Commission federal funds review process. But the money must be deposited in the state treasury and is appropriated to the board only for the purposes for which it was received from the federal government. And by January 15th of each year, the Board of Animal Health would report to Senate Finance, House of Representatives Ways and Means, and the Legislative Agriculture Committees that have authority over the board's operating budget regarding the amount of federal money received and spent under this paragraph and the board's use of those funds. So then on section 17, I'll turn it over to Ms. Painter to talk about this provision.
Ms. Painter, please.
Section 17 allows solar energy generating systems producing 1 megawatt or less to be installed on agricultural preserve land. Next, we'll move on to sections 18 to 23, all of which relate to the bio incentives program and allowing facilities to qualify for payments under existing statutes until April 1st, 2023, and also adding provisions for eligibility after April 1st, 2023, when the eligibility would revert to the statutes that were in effect before changes were made in 2019. So sections 18 and 19 apply to the advanced biofuel production incentives. Sections 20 and 21 apply to the renewable chemical production incentive. And sections 22 and 23 apply to the biomass thermal production incentive. I'll turn it back over to Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Sullivan, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll pick up on page 16, section 24, eligibility. This language passed the House and the Senate in identical form and is included in this report. This is a change to the Oriented Strand Board Production Incentive Program administered by the Department of Agriculture. Section 25 at the bottom, this was a Senate provision coming into conference to require the Rural Finance Authority to make decisions on completed loan applications within 10 business days. You'll see on 16.30, the language in this document says when feasible. That's a requirement for the authority. So it provides some flexibility depending on the circumstances. If that's not something that the authority has control over, can't meet that deadline in certain circumstances. Section 26, then both the House and the Senate passed changes to grain buyer requirements in current law. If you look at page 17.30, both the House and the Senate proposed to change the exemptions for certain cash buyers of grain, exemptions from the requirement to post a bond and the requirement to provide financial statements to the Department of Agriculture annually. Under current law, a grain buyer who purchases up to $100,000 cash and cash equivalents each year is exempt. And the compromise agreed to in this language is to increase that threshold from $100,000 to $1 million or less in purchases each year. So moving on then to section 27. The increase you'll see on 18.23, 18.27, both the House and the Senate had the same increase coming in. So it's reflected in this agreement. And then on 19.7, again, it's that increased from $100,000 in annual purchases to $1 million for grain buyers as an exemption from the financial statement requirements. And then, Mr. Chair, if I may turn it back to Ms. Painter to take over with section 28.
Mr. Painter.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 28 amends exemptions to the prohibition against possessing regulated animals. Just as a reminder, those are big cats, bears, and primates. The new exemption would allow for a zoo that is a USDA licensed exhibitor and houses animals owned by institutions accredited by the American Zoological and Aquarium Association and participates in the American Zoo and Aquarium Association Species Survival Plan. Section 29 establishes a Soil Health Financial Assistance Pilot Program, and this was a grant program and statute in the bill. It's now being done as a pilot program, with $500,000 appropriated to it. The program requires the commissioner to develop a healthy soil management plan with stakeholders. It allows the commissioner to award grants for projects on agricultural land that will improve soil health. Landowners and lessees would be eligible. And we also added in the eligibility for local government units, provided that the purchases that are made by them are available to the public. And this program would expire on June 30th, 2024. Section 30 allows the commissioner to convene the grain advisory group and develop recommendations to improve the grain licensing program and then report back to the legislature. And I believe that concludes our walkthrough. So we'll welcome questions.
Thank you. To the committee, any questions on the information on the proposals here? Okay, Representative Anderson, please.
And I believe I'm unmuted, Mr. Chair. Thank you. A couple of questions again for Mr. Sullivan. Language that carried regarding the grain elevator thing. And we're raising from $100,000 to $1 million. Those that buy grain by cash, and the language says pay immediately. What do we mean by immediately? Does it mean when a truck comes in, they have to be paid right away, or is tomorrow okay? Or what about the meaning of the word immediately?
Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, you know, that's a really good question. That's current law language, and it's not any more specific than immediately. So the Department of Agriculture, as the agency that implements this language, must have a working understanding of what that means so that they can enforce this requirement. And I don't know if there's anyone from the department on the call who could answer that question.
Commissioner, would you like to weigh in on this?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm trying to remember and we do not have Mr. Milanowski on this. I can message him quick. Let me see. I do know that in looking at this, it is, Mr. Sullivan said that it wasn't a lot of change, and we felt like this would impact about five or less elevators or handlers. It's a very small percentage of people that this will affect, but it'll be welcome for those people that we're going to be working with.
Okay. Representative Anderson, anything further at this point?
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Just a clarification again to Mr. Sullivan. Kind of skipped over. It looked like there was a change made in that next tier of grain elevator size to require auditing or reviews. Did we in fact increase the 5 million cap to 7.5 million? It looks like we did, but it wasn't mentioned in your walkthrough. On the 18, line 23.
Comments, Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, yes, you are correct. Coming into conference, both the House and the Senate proposed to increase that threshold from review to audited financial statements from $5 million to $7.5 million. So I did skim over that during my walkthrough, but you're absolutely correct. That is in here, and that increase would take effect if this were enacted.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions on this portion? Okay. Thank you, staff, for a very complete presentation. I have no further questions. Senator Westrom, would you like to...
Please turn it on.
Move adoption of the revisor's document coded BD-AG-APP. Oh. Representative Anderson's got a question first. Are you done? Okay. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, I was going to propose or move that we would bring forth the article of broadband, at least as far as we've had agreement on it, to do a walkthrough of that as well.
And then, we're not prepared to do a walkthrough on that at this point. We have nothing prepared for a walkthrough on that, as there's some ongoing discussions regarding the broadband bill. I know our House leadership is involved in conversations to get this resolved, and Hopefully we get that done in the course of the day. It might be attached to the original bill 4366, along with the housing. So there's no sense of immediacy on this right now, whereas I'd really like to get the ag portions and disaster relief forwarded sooner rather than later.
Mr. Chair, we have provided the committee a copy of it. I believe it's been posted now, but our Senate Council could walk through it so we at least know where we're at. Then we can keep talking from there. As I've said before, the Senate would not be supportive of moving some articles and not others that we've had and discussed. So if we want to go through that and then take a recess and maybe a talk, but that's what the Senate would propose. Or
I think. Thank you. I think a recess is a good idea, and I think maybe we should do that sooner rather than later. So if you're available for conversations, that would be terrific. I'm going to call a recess to the call of the chair, hopefully no longer than a half an hour. Okay, we're in recess.
All right. Thank you.